Hello, this is your Polycast for Tuesday, January 3rd, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, the 2017 legislative session begins, and it could be a bumpy ride. Happy New Year, everybody. Minnesota lawmakers begin a new legislative session today. Already there are some parallels to 2011 when gridlock over the state budget resulted in a government shutdown. Just like 6 years ago, DFL Governor Mark Dayton must try to bridge a wide philosophical divide with a Republican-controlled House and Senate. But unlike 2011, the state has a budget surplus, not a massive deficit. Tim Pugmire has the story.
Last month's failure to reach agreement on a special legislative session to address rising health insurance costs, tax relief, and public construction projects was a troubling preview of the even tougher negotiations that lie ahead. Asked about the implications, Governor Dayton offered a bleak prediction for the 2017 regular session.
A very difficult one. Very, very contentious. Very charged with the politics of 2018, people running for governor and wanting to stage confrontations to build their standing with their own party and their visibility, and it's going to be very difficult.
Dayton isn't seeking re-election, but Dowd and a few other legislators are mentioned as likely Republican candidates for governor in 2018. Dowd described his relationship with Dayton as damaged following their public squabbling over the failed special session. He also said it's up to the governor to repair it.
This is a relationship business. The governor is going to put forth an agenda, a budget that he's going to want to get passed. He needs relationships in the legislature to pass his agenda. There's no other way to get it done. He can't sign a bill that we don't send him.
The new player at the negotiation table is Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka of Nisswa. Republicans won control of the Senate for the first time since 2011 and 2012. Gazelka, who was then part of a new class of senators, says the approach will be different this time with a narrow one-seat advantage.
That was the first time that Republicans had had the House and Senate in over 40 years. And so there was some exuberance about how and what we thought we could get done.
Gazelka says the emphasis will be on health care changes, tax relief, transportation funding, and a budget that slows the growth of government. He also wants to set a productive tone in working with the governor.
We already know where, if we come in conflict with the governor, where we're going to just never come to a solution. And so those things we know, we don't have to keep fighting those battles. We know where we stand.
Dayton's budget proposal is due by January 24th. He'll base his recommendations on the recent economic forecast that showed the state with a $1.4 billion surplus. Dayton began his first term as governor in 2011, facing a $6 billion budget deficit. The memory of that year's challenges is why Dayton has been urging budget caution. He stressed that he won't accept Republican efforts to give back the surplus as tax cuts.
We've gone from chronic deficits to sustained surpluses, and that's something that I intend to protect.
Dayton said he'll propose tax cuts similar to those lost when he vetoed last session's tax bill due to a potentially expensive math error. Republicans are expected to go bigger on taxes, including an exemption on Social Security income. DFL House Minority Leader Melissa Hortman is urging Republicans to listen to Democrats more often and to pass bills early to avoid end-of-session chaos.
It will be rather clear from the outset, from the governor's budget, and from certain strongly held DFL values, that there are some things that are non-starters. And inclusion of those things in final budget bills are likely to create problems. We can see the train wrecks coming before the train wrecks happen.
After last month's collapse of special session talks, Governor Dayton said he plans to introduce a bonding bill proposal this month that looks similar to the list of public construction projects left unresolved last session. But Speaker Dowd said a bonding bill might not happen this year. Lawmakers must complete their work by May 22nd. Covering politics, I'm Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Opening day of the legislature tends to bring out lawmakers and guests in their Sunday best. Today they'll gather in a state capitol that itself has been gussied up during a multi-year $310 million restoration. While there are some new features and plenty of fresh paint, officials won't be bothered if you think the place still has the feel of 1905. Brian Baxt has more.
Just walking up to the Capitol offers a glimpse of the old, looking new. The white Georgia marble shines in the sunlight, and the decorative features that had begun to crumble are back to form. You pretty much have to approach on foot, because security updates mean the avenue out front is closed to normal traffic. Visitors heading inside can still come and go without passing through metal detectors. Department Administration Commissioner Matt Mossman is full of superlatives as he predicts what the first impressions will be.
So it's going to be really remarkable, jaw-dropping, I think, for people who have been in the Capitol before, or even if you haven't, to come through and see the restoration, see places that you've been seeing for years and how much more spectacular it looks after it's been cleaned up and restored.
In 1898, 2 years into the Capitol's construction, U.S. Senator Cushman Davis addressed a crowd at a cornerstone laying ceremony. He proclaimed the building would be, quote, the great political sensorium of Minnesota, unquote, where what you see, hear, and touch overloads the senses. Brian Pease of the Minnesota Historical Society says that feeling of awe has returned. He's seen it recently as building tenants have stopped in for sneak peeks.
You know, there's a lot of mouths open, a lot of people like, wow, or ah, or, you know, the typical reactions we have for the public, but I think it's compounded more so because everything's fresher, brighter, newer looking.
So what's different? For starters, there's more room for the public to roam, 40,000 square feet more, with new places to assemble a school group, grab a bite to eat, stage a rally, or relax with a newspaper. The formerly claustrophobic basement used to have exposed pipe and wiring that gave it the feel of a submarine. Now there are wide hallways and newly tiled floors, with a circular gathering spot at its center. Mossman likes to start there as he shows off the changes. Then he heads for the elevator.
We're going up. The inside door is glass, and then the original doors of the elevator shafts were originally glass. And so as part of the restoration on all of the first, second, third floors, all of the other floors of the Capitol, we went back to glass, so you'll see a lot more natural light pouring into the building through the elevator corridors with the restored glass.
The brightness also comes from above. Third floor skylights long hidden by dark paint, drop ceilings, and ventilation ducts have been exposed in the east wing, where there are also more side rooms and lounging areas for the public. Throughout the building, people will find and can use some of the 600 pieces of historic furniture traced to original designs by Cass Gilbert, the Capitol's architect. And if there are areas of the building that look the same as before, that's part of the point. Wayne Wozlowski helped oversee the project and says planners didn't want to tinker too much with history.
And when we started the project, we broke the building down into zones, and zone one space is the highest level of preservation. And so you want those spaces to look exactly like they did in 1905, or as close as possible to what they looked like in 1905.
That's the case with the rotunda and the chambers for the House and Senate. There's new carpet, matching the old patterns, and delicately retouched murals where the color pops from the walls, like the neon green wrap worn by one figure in a Moses mural in the Supreme Court chamber. Inside the giant dome encasing the rotunda, years of plaster damage from water intrusion and buildup from coal, soot, and cigarette smoke have been reversed.
In many ways, this is unchanged, except for the colors are a lot more vibrant. It's not leaking. The stone's been cleaned. The floor has been cleaned. The chandelier functions better. We're not concerned when it goes up and down that the mechanical systems are going to break or fail. So it really is what you don't see is where the $310 million went into this.
A series of grand reopening events is set for August 11th through the 13th, but guided tours are now available. I'm Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News, at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. If you're around the radio at 11 today, tune in. I'll be live from the Capitol with a lot of lawmakers and other guests.